Every man wants to be happy, but they can't seem to figure out what makes life happy. Attaining happiness is not easy, and the harder a person tries, the further away they can find themselves if they choose the wrong path. This path, going in the opposite direction, leads them further astray, their swift efforts only taking them further from their goal. So, even though we are far away, we must first make it very clear what we want to achieve. Next, we need to think about the fastest way to get there, because it's on the way, if we're going in the right direction. That's when we'll see how much progress we've made each day, and how close we are to the goal our natural wants take us. Keep listening to my voice for guidance towards ultimate happiness in your life, no matter the challenges you face. We'll be using Seneca's teachings to help guide us on this journey. We will waste our short lives wandering around aimlessly, as long as we don't follow any direction other than the shouts and clamors of people telling us to go in different directions. As a result, let us not decide whether we should go and what route to take without first getting help from someone who has been to the area we are about to enter and has a lot of experience with it. There aren't the same conditions for this trip as others, because we know the way and have asked the locals questions that make it impossible for us to go wrong. But in this case, the most worn out and common distractions are the ones that lead us wrong the most. That's why it's more important than anything else that we don't follow the group that went before us, like sheep, and worry about where the others are going instead of where we are. Now, there is nothing that gets us into more trouble than listening to rumors and believing that things are best because most people think they are. We also tend to mistake many fakes for real goods and live our lives by copying what other people do. This is why people rushed into those big piles and piled on top of each other in a huge crowd. People can't fall off when the crowd presses together, because each person pulls another person down with them. Those who go ahead destroy those who come after them. In real life, you can see the same thing. No one can do wrong by themselves. They have to both cause and encourage someone else to do wrong. It is bad to follow the steps of those who came before us, and because everyone would rather believe someone else than form their own opinion, we never make a conscious decision about life. Instead, some old mistake always gets us into trouble and destroys us, and we die because we follow other men's examples. If we stop following the crowd, we should be able to get rid of this. But as things stand, the mob is ready to fight against reason to defend its own mistake. As a result, the same thing happens as during elections. When the wind of popular opinion has changed direction, those who were elected are praised by the men who made them what they are. Every choice that is made based on the opinions of the majority ends up making everyone agree or disagree with the same things. It's not possible to answer me as if this view has the most fans after a house split when we're talking about a happy life. That's why it's the worst of the two. Things aren't going so well for people that the majority should choose the better path. It's more likely to get worse if more people do it. So, let's not ask what is most commonly done, but what is best for us and will make us happy forever, not what the common people, who are the worst possible representatives of truth, think is right. People who wear woolen cloaks and people who wear hats are both rude. There is no difference in the color of their clothes that I care about. If you want to know what a man is, don't believe your looks. I have a better and more reliable way to tell the difference between truth and lies. Let your mind figure out what it needs. If a person never gives his mind a chance to rest and talks to himself, imagine what secrets he will begin to tell himself after being tortured by himself. He will say, "I wish I could take back everything I have done so far. I feel bad for stupid people when I think about what I said. What I've been hoping for seems to be what my enemies were hoping would happen to me. Good grief, what I feared seems to be a lot less bad for me than what I wanted. I used to hate a lot of men, but now I'm friends with some of them, if friends can exist between bad men. but I still haven't made peace with myself. With everything I had, I worked hard to stand out from the crowd and be known for some special skills. Just to mark myself for my enemy's arrows and show those who hate me where to hit me, what have I done? Do you see the people who praise your intelligence, want your money, your favor, or your power? Everything on this list is either your enemy or could be your enemy. There are just as many people who do not like you as there are who do. Why don't I look for something good that I can touch and use instead of something I can show? The good things that men are amazed by, crowd around to see, and point out to each other with silent awe, are bright on the outside, but painful on the inside. To the people who have them, let's look for a gift that doesn't just look good, but is also sound and good all the way through, even in the parts that aren't seen. There is something nearby that we can find, so let's dig it up. This is all you need to know, whether to put out your hand or not. As things stand, though, we act like we don't know what's going on and reach beyond what's close to us, which hurts the very things we want. But so I don't get off track, I'm going to skip over the ideas of other philosophers because it would take too long to say and argue against them all. Take ours. But when I say ours, I'm not tied to any of the Stoic school's leaders, because I have the right to have my own opinion too. So, I will follow what some of them say, but I will ask others to help me figure out what they mean. Or, when asked for my opinion after hearing all of theirs, I might not question any of their choices and instead say, I will also add something to them. In the meantime, I follow nature, which is something that all Stoic philosophers agree on. Being truly wise means staying close to nature and modeling our behavior after her rules and examples. Because of this, a happy life is one that goes with its natural flow and can't happen unless, first, the mind is sound and stays sound without any problems. Second, the person is brave and strong, able to handle everything with admirable courage, appropriate to the time they live in. Third, they are careful with their body and its parts, without being too careful. It must also give all the things that make our lives beautiful their proper value, without overestimating any of them. It must also be able to enjoy fortune's gifts without becoming her slave. You already know, without me having to say it, that when we get rid of all the things that either make us happy or scared, we are free and relaxed. We get an immense, unchanging, fair joy instead of physical pleasures, those small, temporary things that are linked to the worst crimes. We also get peace, calmness, greatness of mind, and kindness, because all savagery is a sign of weakness. Our highest good can also be defined in a different way, which means the same idea can be said in a different way. Just like the same army can grow bigger at times and get smaller at other times. It can also be curved toward the wings by making a depression in the center line or drawn up in a straight line. Strength and loyalty stay the same no matter what shape they are in. In the same way, our meaning of the best good can be vague and long at times and short and clear at other times. So, it doesn't matter if I say that the highest good is a mind that hates luck and enjoys virtue, or if I say that it is an unconquerable mind that knows the world well, is kind, and shows a lot of respect and kindness to those it meets. What does it mean to be happy? It means that a person only knows good and bad in the form of good and bad minds, that he values honor and is content with his own virtue, that he is neither inflated by good fortune nor brought down by bad fortune, that he knows no other good than what he can give himself, and that his real pleasure comes from hating the pleasures he used to seek. As a side note, this idea can be expressed in a lot of different ways that don't change its meaning. What stops us from saying that a happy life is made up of a mind that is free, right, unafraid, and steady, that doesn't let fear or desire affect it, that thinks nothing good except honor and nothing bad except shame, and that sees everything else as a bunch of small things that can't add to or take away from life's happiness, but come and go without changing the highest good. It doesn't matter if a person follows these principles or not, they will always be happy, and their happiness comes from above, because they are content with what they have and don't want anything better. Isn't he right to let these weigh against the small, silly, and short-lived actions of his miserable body? The same day she proves she can't feel happiness, he proves he can't feel pain. On the other hand, look at how bad and guilty of slavery the man is who has to serve the most interesting and passionate masters who control him with pleasure and pain. So, we need to get away from them and be free. There is nothing that will give us safe disdain for luck. But if we reach this goal, those priceless blessings will come to us. The peace of mind that is safe and sound, its high hopes, its constant joy at getting rid of mistakes and discovering the truth, its kindness and happiness. We will enjoy all of these things not because they are good things, but because they come from what is best for people. Since I've started to define things without being too literal, I think a person is happy if, because of reason, he or she has stopped hoping or fearing. But rocks and cows don't feel fear or sadness either. Still, things that don't understand what happiness is wouldn't be called happy. Men who are boring and don't know themselves can be put in the same category as them. They are just animals. These two things are the same because they don't have a reason to be different. This is bad for the first group because they only have a twisted and sneaky version of it. Because no one can be called happy if they are not affected by truth. This means that a happy life can't be changed and is based on true and reliable judgment. Because the mind is pure and free from all harm when it can avoid both wounds and scratches. Once it has taken a stand, it will always be able to keep it and defend it, even when fortune attacks it with anger. For when it comes to sensual pleasures, they could attack from all sides, trying to win over the mind through caresses and trying every possible strategy to attract either our whole selves or our separate parts. But what mortal that still has any traces of human origin would want to be tickled all day and night, ignoring his mind to focus on body pleasures? But our enemy says that the mind will have its own joys too. That being said, let it have them and judge wealth and pleasure. As much as possible, let it enjoy all the things that make it feel good. Then it should remember the pleasures it had in the past, and while those memories are still fresh in its mind, it should be happy and eagerly anticipate the other pleasures it has enjoyed in the past and plans to enjoy again. In the present, while the body lies helpless being filled, it should think about the future and count what it holds. All of this will make it look even worse, in my opinion, because picking evil over good is crazy. Now, someone who is crazy can't be happy. And someone who thinks that harm is the best thing and works hard to get it is also crazy. That is why the happy person is the one who can judge everything correctly. When someone is happy, they are content with their life and don't mind the way things are right now, no matter what. That person is happy whose mind tells him what's best for all of his business. Some people say that the greatest good is in the belly, but even they know that this is an unworthy place to give it. As a result, they say that joy and virtue go hand in hand, and that no one can live a good life without being happy. Even better, be happy without being honorable. What these two very different things have to do with each other, I don't see. Please tell me what stops virtue from living without pleasure. Of course, that's because all good things start with virtue. This means that even the things you value and seek have roots in virtue. If they were completely linked, though, we wouldn't think that some things are nice but not honorable, and others are very honorable but hard to reach and can only be done through pain. Also, happiness comes into the lives of the base, but virtue cannot live with evil. Though some sad people do enjoy things, in fact, it's the things that make them unhappy which wouldn't be possible if pleasure were linked to virtue. On the other hand, virtue doesn't need pleasure and doesn't have to have it. Why do you mix two things that are so different from each other that they don't even work together? Virtue is a high level of equality. Sublime, royal, unconquerable, unending pleasure is low, mindless, weak, and short-lived. The brothel and the bar are where it lives and hangs out. You can find virtue in the temple, the market, the senate house, and on the walls of the dungeon, which are dirty, sunburned, and horny. It will be fun to hide in plain sight and look for shady spots in public baths, hot chambers, and other places that fear the edile's visits. Soft, girly, smelling of wine and perfume, pale, or maybe painted and made up with makeup. The greatest good lasts forever. It has no beginning or end, and it doesn't allow for either satisfaction or regret, because a right-thinking mind never changes or hates itself, and the best things never change. But joy ends just as it's beginning to charm us. There isn't much room for it to grow, so it quickly shuts down, worries us, and goes away as soon as its initial urge is over. In fact, we can't count on things that are bound to change. So, there can't be any real matter in something that comes and goes so quickly and dies just by doing its job. You see, it gets to a point where it stops being, and even as it starts, it always keeps its end in mind. If we think about how happiness is shared by good and bad people, and how bad people enjoy being ashamed as much as good people enjoy noble things, what should we say? Because of this, the ancients told us to live the best, not the most pleasant, life so that joy wouldn't be the guide, but rather the friend of a good mind. Nature should be our God, that's why. To live a happy life, let our reason watch her and listen to what she has to say. Then it's the same as living in line with nature. I will describe what this might be. We are careful and bold with the gifts of our bodies and the benefits of nature because we know they are only here for a day. No matter what, we won't be ruled by them or let something that isn't part of who we are make us slaves. We make all body pleasures and outward delights our servants instead of our masters if we treat them like troops with light weapons and helpers in a camp. Then and only then are they useful to our minds. A man should be fair and not let outside things control him. He should only admire himself and have faith in his own character. By living his life in this way, he will be ready for both good and bad luck. He shouldn't have faith without understanding, and he shouldn't know things without being firm. No changes should be made to his beliefs. He should always stick to what he decided. It will be clear, even though I didn't say it, that this kind of man will be calm and collected, and he will act in a moral and polite way. Allow your feelings to push your reason to look for the truth, so that you can draw your first principles from it. In fact, it doesn't have any other main office or place to begin its pursuit of truth. Whatever goes out into the world and then comes back to itself from every direction has to fall back on itself. This includes the universe as a whole and God, who is its guide. What should our mind do? It has already done this when it followed its senses and went out into the things of the outside world. Let it stay their boss and its own. Through this, we will gain strength and skill that are joined and allied, and we will also get reason that never stops between two opinions and is never slow to form its views, beliefs, or convictions. It has reached the greatest good when it has put itself in order and made all of its different parts agree with each other, or, if I may use a more poetic term, synchronize. Because it doesn't have anything bad, hard, or unfair left, nothing that could shake it or make it fall. Nothing out of the ordinary will happen because it will do everything according to its own will. But whatever it is used for will work out well, and it will work out quickly and easily without the person doing it having to use any sneaky methods. Because moving slowly and thinking about what to do are signs of discord and a hidden goal. then you can boldly say that peace of mind is the greatest good, because virtues must be present where there is agreement and unity. The vices are at odds with each other. But, says our adversary, you yourself only practice virtue because you hope to obtain some pleasure from it. In the first place, even though virtue may afford us pleasure, still we do not seek after her on that account, for she does not bestow this, but bestows this too. Nor is this the end for which she labors, but her labor wins this also, although it be directed to another end. As in a tilled field when ploughed for corn, some flowers are found amongst it, and yet though these posies may charm the eye, all this labor was not spent in order to produce them. The man who sold the field had another object in view. He gained this over and above it. So pleasure is not the reward or the cause of virtue, but comes in addition to it. More do we choose virtue because she gives us pleasure, but she gives us pleasure also, if we choose her. The highest good lies in the act of choosing her, and in the attitude of the noblest minds, which, when once it has fulfilled its function and established itself within its own limits, has attained to the highest good and needs nothing more. For there is nothing outside of the whole any more than there is anything beyond the end. You are mistaken, therefore, when you ask me what it is on account of which I seek after virtue, for you are seeking for something above the highest. Do you ask what I seek from virtue? I answer, herself, for she has nothing better. She is her own reward. Does this not appear great enough when I tell you that the highest good is an unyielding strength of mind, wisdom, magnanimity, sound judgment, freedom, harmony, beauty? Do you still ask me for something greater, of which these may be regarded as the attributes? Why do you talk of pleasures to me? I am seeking to find what is good for man, not for his belly. Why cattle and whales have larger ones than he? I mean for you to misunderstand what I say, he says. For I too say that no one can live pleasantly unless he lives honorably also. And this cannot be the case with dumb animals who measure the extent of their happiness by that of their food. I loudly and publicly proclaim that what I call a pleasant life cannot exist without the addition of virtue. Yet who does not know that the greatest fools drink the deepest of those pleasures of yours, or that vice is full of enjoyments, and that the mind itself suggests to itself many perverted, vicious forms of pleasure? In the first place, arrogance, excessive self-esteem, swaggering precedence over other men, a short-sighted, nay, a blind, devotion to his own interests, dissolute luxury, excessive delight springing from the most trifling and childish causes, and also talkativeness, pride that takes pleasure in insulting others, sloth, and the decay of a dull mind which goes to sleep over itself. All these are dissipated by virtue, which plucks a man by the ear and measures the value of pleasures before she permits them to be used. Nor does she set much store by those which she allows to pass current, for she merely allows their use, and her cheerfulness is not due to her use of them, but to her moderation in using them. Yet when moderation lessens pleasure, it impairs the highest good. You devote yourself to pleasures, I check them. You indulge in pleasure, I use it. You think that it is the highest good, I do not even think it to be good for the sake of pleasure. I do nothing, you do everything. When I say that I don't do anything for pleasure, I'm talking about that wise man that you say can feel pleasure. Now, I don't think of someone as wise if they are overcome by anything, let alone pleasure. But if they are overcome by pleasure, how will they be able to stand up to work, danger, want, and all the other things that threaten human life? How will they be able to see death or pain? How will they deal with the chaos of the world and fight so many most active? Do you not see what a poor kind of highest good that must be, which requires a guardian to ensure its being good at all? And how is virtue to rule pleasure if she follows it, seeing that to follow is the duty of a subordinate, to rule that of a commander. Do you put that which commands in the background according to your school? Virtue has the dignified office of a preliminary tester of pleasures. We shall, however, see whether virtue still remains virtue among those who treat her with such contempt. For if she leaves her proper station, she can no longer keep her proper name. In the meanwhile, to keep to the point, I will show you many men beset by pleasures, men upon whom fortune has showered all her gifts, whom you must needs admit to be Batman. Look at no maintenance and officious, who digest all the good things, as they call them, of the sea and land, and review upon their tables the whole animal kingdom. Look at them as they lie on beds of roses, gloating over their banquet, delighting their ears with music, their eyes with exhibitions, their palates with flavors, their whole bodies articulated with soft and soothing applications, unless even their nostrils should be idle. The very place in which they solemn said in the rites of luxury is scented with various perfumes. You will say that these men live in the midst of pleasures, yet they are ill at ease because they take pleasure in what is not good. They are ill at ease, replies he, because many things arise which distract their thoughts, and their minds are disquieted by conflicting opinions. I admit that this is true. Still, these very men, foolish, inconsistent, and certain to feel remorse as they are, do nevertheless receive great pleasure. And we must allow that, in so doing, they are as far from feeling any trouble as they are from forming a right judgment. And that, as is the case with many people, they are possessed by a merry madness and laugh while they rave. The pleasures of wise men, on the other hand, are mild, decorous, verging on dullness, kept under restraint and scarcely noticeable, and are neither invited to come nor receive with honor when they come of their own accord, nor are they welcome with any delight by those whom they visit, who makes them up with their lives and fill up empty spaces with them like an amusing farce in the intervals of serious business. Let them no longer then join incongruous matters together or connect pleasure with virtue, a mistake whereby they court the worst of men. The reckless profligate, always in liquor and belching out the fumes of wine, believes that he lives with virtue because he knows that he lives with pleasure, for he hears it said that pleasure cannot exist apart from virtue. Consequently, he dubs his vices with the title of wisdom and parades all that he ought to conceal. So, men are not encouraged by a peculace to run riot, but the vicious hide their excesses in the lap of philosophy and flock to the schools in which they hear the praises of pleasure. They do not consider how sober and temperate, for so by Hercules I believe it to be, that pleasure of Epicurus. But they rush at his mere name, seeking to obtain some protection and cloak for their vices. They lose, therefore, the one virtue which their evil life possessed, that of being ashamed of doing wrong, for they praise what they used to blush at and boast of their vices. Thus modesty can never reassert itself when shameful idleness is dignified with an honorable name. The reason why that praise, which your school lavishes upon pleasure, is so hurtful is because the honorable part of its teaching passes unnoticed, but the degrading part is seen by all. I myself believe, though my Stoic comrades would be unwilling to hear me say so, that the teaching of Epicurus was upright and holy, and even if you examine it narrowly, stern. For this much talked of pleasure is reduced to a very narrow compass, and he bids pleasure submit to the same law which we bid virtue do, I mean to obey nature. Luxury, however, is not satisfied with what is enough for nature. What is the consequence? Whoever thinks that happiness consists in lazy sloth and alternations of gluttony and profligacy requires a good patron for a bad action. And when he has become an Epicurean, having been led to do so by the attractive name of that school, he follows not the pleasure which he there hears spoken of, but that which he brought thither with him. And having learned to think that his vices coincide with the maxims of that philosophy, He indulges in them, no longer timidly and in dark corners, but boldly in the face of day. I will not, therefore, like most of our school, say that the sect of Epicurus is the teacher of crime. But what I say is, it is ill spoken of, it has a bad reputation, and yet it does not deserve it. Who can know this without having been admitted to its inner mysteries? Its very outside gives opportunity for scandal and encourages men's baser desires. It is like a brave man rest in a woman's gown. Your chastity is assured, your manhood is safe, your body is submitted to nothing disgraceful, but your hand holds a drum like a priest of Cybele. Choose then some honorable superscription for your school, some writing which shall in itself arouse the mind. That which at present stands over your door has been invented by the vices. He who ranges himself on the side of virtue gives thereby a proof of a noble disposition. He who follows pleasure appears to be weakly worn out, degrading his manhood, likely to fall into infamous vices, unless someone discriminates his. Pleasure is for him so, that he may know which remain within the bounds of natural desire, which are frantic and boundless, and become all the more insatiable, the more they are satisfied. But come, let virtue lead the way, then every step will be safe. Too much pleasure is hurtful, but with virtue we need fear no excess of any kind, because moderation is contained in virtue herself. That which is injured by its own extent cannot be a good thing. Besides, what better guide can there be than reason for beings endowed with a reasoning nature? So, if this combination pleases you, if you are willing to proceed to a happy life, thus accompany, let virtue lead the way, let pleasure follow, and hang about the body like a shadow. It is the part of a mind incapable of great things to hand over virtue, the highest of all qualities, as a handmaid to pleasure. Let virtue lead the way, and bear the pleasure and virtue standard. We shall have pleasure for all that, but we shall be her masters and controllers. She may win some concessions from us, but will not force us to do anything. On the contrary, those who have permitted pleasure to lead the van have neither one nor the other, for they lose virtue altogether, and yet they do not possess pleasure, but are possessed by it, and are either tortured by its absence or choked by its success. Being wretched if deserted by it, and yet more wretched if overwhelmed by it, like those who are caught in the shoals of the Syrtes, and at one time are left on dry ground, and at another tossed on the flowing waves. This arises from an exaggerated one of self-control and a hidden love of evil, for it is dangerous for one who seeks after evil instead of good to attain his object, as we hunt wild beasts with toil and peril, and even when they are caught, find them in anxious possession, for they often tear their keepers to pieces. Even so are great pleasures. They turn out to be great evils and take their owners prisoner. The more numerous and the greater they are, the more inferior and the slave of more masters does that man become, whom the vulgar call a happy man. I may even press this analogy further, as the man who tracks wild animals to their lairs, and who sets great store on seeking with smears the wandering brutes to news, and making their hounds the spacious glade surround, that he may follow their tracks, neglects far more desirable things, and leaves many duties unfulfilled. So, he who pursues pleasure postpones everything to it, disregards that first essential liberty, and sacrifices it to his belly. Nor does he buy pleasure for himself, but sells himself to pleasure. But what asks our adversary is there to hinder virtue and pleasure being combined together, and the highest good being thus formed, so that honor and pleasure may be the same thing. Because nothing except what is honorable can form a part of honor, and the highest good would lose its purity if it were to see within itself anything unlike its own better part. Even the joy which arises from virtue, although it be a good thing, yet is not a part of absolute good, any more than cheerfulness or peace of mind, which are indeed good things, but which merely follow the highest good and do not contribute to its perfection, although they are generated by the noblest causes. Whoever, on the other hand, forms an alliance, and that too, a one-sided one between virtue and pleasure, clogs whatever strength the one may possess by the weakness of the other, and sends liberty under the yoke. For liberty can only remain unconquered as long as she knows nothing more valuable than herself. For he begins to need the help of fortune, which is the most utter slavery. His life becomes anxious, full of suspicion, timorous, fearful of accidents, waiting in agony for critical moments of time. You do not afford virtue a solid and movable base if you bid it stand on what is unsteady, and what can be so unsteady as dependence on mere chance and the vicissitudes of the body and of those things which act on the body? How can such a man obey God and receive everything which comes to pass in a cheerful spirit, never complaining of fate, and putting a good construction upon everything that befalls him, if he be agitated by the petty pinpricks of pleasures and pains? A man cannot be a good protector of his country, a good avenger of her wrongs, or a good defender of his friends, if he be inclined to pleasures. Let the highest good then rise to that height from whence no force can dislodge it, whether neither pain can ascend, nor hope, nor fear, nor anything else that can impair the authority of the highest good, that their virtue alone can make her way by raid, that hill must be climbed, she will bravely stand her ground and endure whatever may befall her, not only resignedly, but even willingly. She will know that all hard times come in obedience to natural laws, and like a good soldier, she will bear wounds, count scars, and when transfixed and dying will yet adore the general for whom she falls. She will bear in mind the old maxim, follow God. On the other hand, he who crumbles and complains and bemoans himself is nevertheless forcibly obliged to obey orders and is dragged away, however much against his will, to carry them out. As great, by Hercules, as it is folly and ignorance of one's true position to grieve, because one has not got something, or because something has caused us rough treatment, or to be surprised or indignant at those ills which befall good men as well as bad ones. I mean diseases, deaths, illnesses, and the other cross accidents of human life. Let us bear with magnanimity whatever the system of the universe makes it needful for us to bear. We are all bound by this oath to bear the ills of mortal life, and to submit with a good grace to what we cannot avoid. We have been born into a monarchy. Our liberty is to obey God. Because of this, virtue is the key to true happiness. And what will virtue tell you to do? It will tell you not to think anything bad or good that has nothing to do with virtue or wickedness. It will also tell you to endure and move the attacks of evil, and as much as possible, to make a god out of what is good. What reward does she promise you for this campaign? A huge one that puts you on the same level as the gods and lets you rebel against no one. Why, of course, perfect and divine virtue like this not only suffices, but more than suffices. For when a man is cut off from all desires, what could he possibly lack? If he has everything he needs, how could he need anything else? But someone who is only on the path to virtue, even if they have made a lot of progress, still needs some help from fortune while they are still battling with human interests. If, therefore, any one of those dogs who yelp at philosophy were to say, as they are wont to do, "Why then do you talk so much more bravely than you live? Why do you check your words in the presence of your superiors and consider money to be a necessary implement? Why are you disturbed when you sustain losses and weep on hearing of the death of your wife or your friend? Why do you pay regard to common rumor and feel annoyed by Columbus gossip? Why is your estate more elaborately kept than its natural use requires? Why do you not dine according to your own maxims? Why is your furniture smarter than it need be? Why do you drink wine that is older than yourself? Why are your grounds laid out? Why do you plant trees which afford nothing except shade? Why does your wife wear in her ears the price of a rich man's house? Why are your children at school dressed in costly clothes? Why is it a science to wait upon you at the table? Why is your silver plate not set down anyhow or at random, but skillfully disposed in regular order, with a superintendent to proceed over the carving of the vines? Add to this, if you like, the questions: why do you own property beyond the seas? Why do you own more than you know of? It is a shame to you not to know your slaves by sight, for you must be very neglectful of them if you only own a few, or very extravagant if you have too many for your memory to retain. I will add some reproaches afterwards, and will bring more accusations against myself than you think of. For the present, I will make you the following answer: I am not a wise man, and I will not be one in order to feed your spite. So do not require me to be on a level with the best of men, but merely to be better than the worst. I am satisfied if every day I take away something from my vices and correct my faults. I have not arrived at perfect soundness of mind. Indeed, I never shall arrive at it. I compound palliatives rather than remedies from my gout, and am satisfied if it comes at rare intervals and does not shoot so painfully compared with your feet, which are lame. I am a racer. I make this speech not on my own behalf, for I am steeped in vices of every kind, but on behalf of one who has made some progress in virtue. You talk one way, objects our adversary, and live another. You, most spiteful of creatures, you always show the bitterest hatred to the best of men. This reproach was flung at Plato, at Epicurus, at Zeno, for all these declared how they ought to live, not how they did live. I speak of virtue, not of myself, and when I blame vices, I blame my own first of all. When I have the power, I shall live as I ought to do. Spite, however, deeply steeped in venom, shall not keep me back from what is best. That poison itself, with which you bespatter others, with which you choke yourselves, shall not hinder me from continuing to praise that life which I do not indeed live, but which I know I ought to leave. From loving virtue, and from following after her, albeit the long way behind her and withholding gait, am I to expect that evil speaking will respect anything, seeing that it respected neither Rutilius nor Cato? Will anyone care about being thought too rich by men for whom Diogenes the Cynic was not poor enough? That most energetic philosopher fought against all the desires of the body, and was poorer even than the other cynics, in that, besides having given up possessing anything, he had also given up asking for anything. Yet they reproached him for not being sufficiently in want, as though forsooth it were poverty, not virtue, of which he professed knowledge. They say that Diodorus, the Epicurean philosopher, who within these last few days put an end to his life with his own hand, did not act according to the precepts of Epicurus in cutting his throat. Some choose to regard this act as the result of madness, others of recklessness. He, meanwhile, happy and filled with the consciousness of his own goodness, has borne testimony to himself by his manner of departing from life, has commended the repose of a life spent at Anchor in a safe harbour, and has said what you do not like to hear, because you too out to do it. I've lived, I've run the race which fortune set me. You argue about the life and death of another, and yelp at the names of men whom some peculiarly noble quality has rendered great, just as tiny curves do at the approach of strangers. For it is to your interest that no one should appear to be good, as if virtue in another were reproach to all your crimes. Enviously compare the glories of others with your own dirty actions, and do not understand how greatly to your disadvantage it is to venture to do so. For if they who follow after virtue be greedy, lustful, and fond of power, what must you be who hate the very name of virtue? You say that no one acts up to his professions or lives according to the standard which he sets up in his discourses. What wonder, seeing that the words which they speak are brave, gigantic, and able to weather all the storms which wreck mankind, whereas they themselves are struggling to tear themselves away from crosses into which each one of you is driving his own nail. Yet men who are crucified hang from one single pole, but these who punish themselves are divided between as many crosses as they have lusts. But yet they are given to evil speaking and are so magnificent in their contempt of the vices of others that I should suppose that they had none of their own, were it not that some criminals went on the gibbet spit upon the spot. Philosophers do not carry into effect all that they teach. No, but they effect much good by their teaching, by the noble thoughts which they conceive in their minds. Would indeed that they could act up to their talk. What could be happier than they would be? But in the meanwhile, you have no right to despise good sayings and hearts full of good thoughts. Men deserve praise for engaging in profitable studies, even though they stop short of producing any results. Why need we wonder if those who begin to climb a steep path do not succeed in ascending it very high? Yet, if you be a man, look with respect on those who attempt great things, even though they fall. It is the act of a generous spirit to proportion its efforts not to its own strength, but to that of human nature, to entertain lofty aims and to conceive plans which are too vast to be carried into execution even by those who are endowed with gigantic intellects, who appoint for themselves the following rules: I will look upon death or upon a comedy with the same expression, count nets, I will submit to labors, however great they may be, supporting the strength of my body by that of my mind. I will despise riches when I have them as much as when I have them not. If they be elsewhere, I will not be more gloomy. If they sparkle around me, I will not be more lively than I should otherwise be. Whether fortune comes or goes, I will take no notice of her. I will view all lands as though they belong to me, and my own as though they belong to all mankind. I will so live as to remember that I was born for others, and will thank nature on this account. For in what fashion could she have done better for me? She has given me alone to all, and all to me alone. Whatever I may possess, I will neither hoard greedily nor squander it recklessly. I will think that I have no possessions so real as those which I have given away to deserving people. I will not reckon benefits by their magnitude or number, or by anything except the value set upon them by the receiver. I never will consider a gift to be a large one if it be bestowed upon a worthy object. I will do nothing because of public opinion, but everything because of conscience. Whenever I do anything alone by myself, I will believe that the eyes of the Roman people are upon me while I do it. In eating and drinking, my object shall be to quench the desires of nature, not to fill, and to my belly I will be agreeable. With my friends, I will be gentle and mild. To my foes, I will grant pardon before I am asked for it, and will meet the wishes of honorable men halfway. I will bear in mind that the world is my native city, that its governors are the gods, and that they stand above and around me, criticizing whatever I do or say. Whenever either nature demands my breath again, or reason bids me dismiss it, I will quit this life, calling all to witness that I have loved a good conscience and good pursuits, that no one's freedom, my only stuff, all, has been impaired through me. He who sets up these as the rules of his life will soar aloft and strive to make his way to the gods. Of a truth, even though he fails, yet he fails in a high enterprise. But you who hate both virtue and those who practice it, do nothing at which we need to be surprised. For sickly lights cannot bear the sun, nocturnal creatures avoid the brightness of day, and at its first dawning become bewildered, and all betake themselves to their dens. Together creatures that fear the light hide themselves in crevices. So croak away and exercise your miserable tongues in reproaching good men. Open wide your jaws. By heart, you will break many teeth before you make any impression. But how is it that this man studies philosophy and nevertheless lives the life of a rich man? Why does he say that wealth ought to be despised and yet possess it? That life should be despised and yet live? That health should be despised and yet be guarded with the utmost care and wish it to be as good as possible? Does he consider banishment to be an empty name and say, what evil is there in changing one country for another? And yet, if permitted, does he not grow old in his native land? Does he declare that there is no difference between a longer and a shorter time? And yet, if he be not prevented, lengthen out his life and flourish in the green old age? His answer is that these things ought to be despised, not that he should not possess them, but that he should not possess them with fear and trembling. He does not drive them away from him, but when they leave him, he follows after them unconcernedly. Where indeed can fortune invest riches more securely than in a place from which they can always be recovered without any squabble with their trustee? Marcus Cato, when he was praising Curius and Coruncanius, and that century in which the possession of a few small silver coins was an offence which was punished by the censor, and himself phoned for a million sisters, a less fortune, no doubt, than that of Crassus, but larger than of Cato the censor. The amounts we compare, he had outstripped his great-grandfather further than he himself was outdone by Crassus, and if still greater riches had fallen to his lot, he would not have spurned them. For the wise man does not think himself unworthy of any chance presents. He does not love riches, but he prefers to have them. He does not receive them into his spirit, but only into his house. Or does he cast away from him what he already possesses, but keeps them, and is willing that his virtue should receive a larger subject matter for its exercise? Who can doubt, however, that the wise man, if he is rich, has a wider field for the development of his powers than if he is poor, seeing that in the latter case, the only virtue which he can display is that of neither being perverted nor crushed by his poverty, whereas if he has riches, he will have a wide field for the exhibition of temperance, generosity, laboriousness, methodical arrangement, and grandeur. The wise man will not despise himself, however short of stature he may be, but nevertheless he will wish to be tall, even though he'd be feeble. And one night he may be in good health, yet he would prefer to have bodily strength, and that too, while he knows all the while that he has something which is even more powerful. He will endure illness and will hope for good health. For some things, though they may be trifles compared with the sum total, and though they may be taken away without destroying the chief good, yet add somewhat to that constant cheerfulness which arises from virtue. Riches encourage and brighten up such a man, just as a sailor is delighted at a favorable wind that bears him on his way, or as people feel pleasure at a fine day or at a sunny spot in the cold weather. What smart person in our school, whose only good is virtue, would deny that even things we don't call good or bad have value, and that some are better than others? We treat some with more respect than others. Don't get it wrong, riches are desirable. So why do you laugh at me, since you put them in the same category as I do? You want to know how different the positions are where we put them. If my riches leave me, they will take nothing with them but themselves. If they leave you, you will be confused and seem to be missing yourself. With me, riches have a certain place, but with you, they have the highest place of all. And fine, my riches belong to me, you belong to your riches. Then she says that philosophers shouldn't have money. No one has said that knowledge will lead to poverty. The philosopher might have a lot of money, but not money that was stolen from someone else or is stained with blood. He must get it without hurting anyone or using dishonest methods to get it. It has to be earned and spent with respect, and it has to be so bad that only hate could shake its head at it. No matter how high you raise it, it will still be a worthy possession if, even though it has many things that every man would like to call his own, no one shall claim them as his own. This kind of man won't give up his right to be lucky, and he won't brag about his fortune or feel bad about it if he earned it the right way. Still, he will have something to brag about if he opens his house to everyone in his country, lets them look through his things, and tells them that if they find anything that belongs to him, they can take it. What a great guy! How very wealthy he must be if he has the same amount of money after the speech as he did before. I say then that a man can proudly and unimaginably enjoy his wealth if he can safely and surely let the people look over his books and no one can find anything in them that he can use. There is one penny that the wise man will not let through, but he will not refuse or close his door on great wealth if they come from good deeds and good luck. What's his reason for not giving them good quarters? Let them come over as guests. He won't show them off or hide them. There is a silly spirit on one side and a fearful and weak spirit on the other. Together, they kind of block out a good thing that is happening. As I already said, he won't kick them out of his house either. What is he going to say? Are you going to tell him, "You're useless," or, "I don't know how to use wealth," since he can walk the distance but would rather ride in a carriage? In this way, he will be able to be poor, but still want to be rich. It will be his wealth, but we will see it as something that isn't secure and will one day fly away from him. Neither he nor anyone else will have to deal with the stress of it. It will be given. Why do your ears stand up? What makes you take your hands out? He will give it to good men or people who could become good men because of it. He will only give it to the best people after putting in a lot of work to find them. This is what someone who knows he has to account for everything he gets and costs does. He is going to give for good reasons, because a bad gift is worse than no gift at all. There won't be a hole in his pocket, but it will be easy to open. This way, things can be taken out without anything falling out. He who thinks that giving is easy is wrong. It comes with a lot of problems if we don't give our gifts in a thoughtful way and not randomly and on impulse. I help this man because I feel sorry for him, and I ask that person to do the same for me. I teach this man again that poverty shouldn't be used to put people down or humiliate them. I'm not going to give some guys anything, even though they need it, because they will still be at war if I do. I will beg some people for my goodies and force them to take them. Also, I can't forget about my own needs while I'm doing this, and giving things away is the only time I make other people owe me money. What do you think? Do you give so that you can get something back? In any case, I don't agree that I should lose my reward. What I give should be put somewhere where I can't ask for it back, but it could be given back to me. A benefit should be spent in the same way that you wouldn't dig up a prize hidden deep in the ground unless you had to. Why? What chances there are to help others that the house of a rich man alone offers? Because who says being kind is only for people who wear togas? God told me to be good to people. What difference does it make if they are slaves or free men, born free or set free, or if they get their freedom officially or through a deal between friends? Everywhere there are people, there are chances to get something good. Thus, money can be shared even within one's own borders, and that space can be used for the practice of free-handedness, which is called that not because it is our job to free men, but because it starts in a mind that was born free. When it comes to the wise man, this never falls on low-class or unworthy people, and it never runs out so that it doesn't flow again as soon as it finds something good. So, there's no reason to misunderstand the honorable, brave, and spirit-filled words that people who are learning wisdom use. To begin, keep in mind that a person who is learning knowledge is not the same as a person who is perfect in wisdom. The first will tell you, "In my speech, I speak the most admirable sentiments, but I am still writhing in pain from many hills. You must not make me follow my rules right now. To become a great model, I am shaping myself and working to become the best person I can be. If I ever finish everything I set out to do, you can demand that my words and actions match. But someone who has reached the highest level of human perfection will treat you differently and say, "First, you have no right to judge your betters. Bad guys don't like me, which is already proof that I'm a good person." But to give you a reasonable answer, one that I don't hold against anyone, listen to what I say about how I value everything. Things are not good, because if they were, they would make people good. Now, because something that can be found even in bad guys can't be called good, I won't let them be called that. Still, I have to say that they are nice to have, useful, and make our lives much easier. Finally, since we both agree that they are desirable, you should find out why I think they are good things and how I should act differently toward you if I have them. Make me the master of a very wealthy person's home. Put me in a place where gold and silver plate are commonly used. These things are in my house, but they are not a part of me. They won't make me feel worse about myself. Take me to the wooden bridge and put me down with the poor people there. I won't feel bad about myself because I'm sitting with people who are asking for money. What does not having a piece of bread matter to someone who has the power to die well? Then, I'd rather have the beautiful house than the beggar's bridge. Put me with beautiful furniture and all the high-end tools. I won't feel better just because my robe is soft or my friends are sitting on purple. Switch things up. My tired head won't be any worse if it rests on a bale of hay or if I lie down on a circus cushion where the stuffing is almost all coming out of the red bear cloth patches. So, when I go out in public, I'd rather be dressed in woolens and office robes than being naked or with only half of my shoulders covered. Every day, I want things to go exactly as I want them to, and I want your compliments to keep coming after the ones that came before. Anyway, I'm not going to brag about this change and luck for its own sake. Let losses, grief, and different kinds of strikes take my mind off of things. Don't let an hour go by without a fight. I won't call myself the most unhappy person because of this, even though I'm going through the worst pain, and I won't curse any particular day either, because I made sure no one had a good day. So, what does all of this mean? It's because I'd rather have to control my happiness than my sadness. You could ask the great Socrates the same thing. Make me the conqueror of all nations. Let the curvy center of Bacchus carry me to Thebes in victory as the sun rises. I want the Persian kings to get laws from me, but I will feel like a man when everyone around me praises me like a god. Right away, connect this great height with a sudden fall into bad luck. Let me ride on a chariot from another country so I can be a part of the victory of a proud and wild monarch. If I follow someone else's car, I won't be any more humble than when I stood in my own. So, despite everything, I would rather be a winner than a prisoner. I hate the whole power of fortune. Still, if I had to pick, I would pick the better parts of it. I will turn anything bad that happens to me into something good. But I would rather that whatever happens to me is easy, nice, and not likely to bother me. You don't have to believe that there is honor without work. Sometimes qualities need spikes, and sometimes they need the curb, just like we have to push our bodies to go up steep hills and check them when they're going down. In the same way, the path of some values goes downhill, and the path of others goes higher. Can we be sure that patience, courage, loyalty, and all the other traits that have to deal with tough situations and stomp on luck aren't fighting and winning their way up a high hill? Why isn't it equally clear that kindness, balance, and charity all go downhill easily? What about the second one? We have to keep it in our spirit so it doesn't break and run away with us. We must push our spirit forward with the first one. So, We should use these active fighting virtues on both poverty and wealth, along with the more thrifty ones that just tripping along and holding their own weight. The difference between them being this: I would rather deal with those that I could practice in relative peace than those that you can only test by blood and sweat. So, the wise man says, I don't talk one way and live another. You don't understand what I say, though. Your ears can hear only the sound of my words. You don't try to figure out what they mean. So what's the difference between me, a fool, and you, a wise man? It makes a huge difference, because money is a slave in the home of a smart man and a boss in the home of a fool. Your body gets used to them, and you hold on to them like someone promised they would always be yours. But a smart person never thinks about being poor more than when he is rich. A general will never have such complete faith in keeping the peace that he doesn't get ready for a war that has been called but may not happen. Your heads are turned by wealth as if it were safe from all harm and so big that luck can't swallow it up. And your hearts are filled with pride at the sight of a beautiful house as if it could never be burned down or damaged. You should waste your time playing with your money and not think about the dangers that are coming, like wild people do when they are under attack. In addition, they don't know how to use assault weapons, so they just watch the workers do their work and don't know what the tools they are putting together are for. And this is what really happens to you. You go to sleep worrying about your property and don't think about how many bad things are waiting around the corner to steal your valuable goods. But even if you take away the smart man's money, he still has everything he owns because he lives in the present and doesn't worry about the future. I have no more fixed principle than that I will not change the course of my life to shoot your prejudices, would say the great Socrates or anyone else with the same strength to deal with the things of this life. All around me, you can talk the way you always do. It won't seem like you're beating me. Instead, it will seem like you're just crying like kids. This is what a wise person will say, whose mind is free of vices and tells him to criticize others, not because he hates them, but to make them better. Additionally, he will say, "Your opinion of me hurts me, not for my own sake, but for yours." Because to hate perfection and attack virtue is to give up all hope of doing well. You don't hurt me, and people who destroy the gods' altars don't hurt them either. It is clear, though, that you want to do harm and will push yourself to do so even when you can't. In the same way that Jupiter, the best and biggest, puts up with writers' silly stories, "I can handle your prayers." Others show him with wings, another with horns, one as an adulterer who stays out all night, one as being unfair to people, one as a seducer of noble youths who he takes by force, and those two are his own relatives. Still others show him as a parasite and the conqueror of another kingdom, and those are his fathers. Men feel less bad about their sins if they think the gods did them, which is the only effect of these stories. However, even though the way you act doesn't hurt me, I still want to give you advice. Respect virtue and believe those who, after following her for a long time, shout that what they follow is mine and seem stronger every day. Honor her like you would honor the gods, and honor those who follow her like you would honor the gods' servants. You should also keep quiet whenever holy texts are brought up. Most people think that this word comes from favor, but it actually comes from command silence, so that words of bad luck don't get in the way of divine service. It is much more important that you are told to do this so that you can listen carefully and quietly whenever that guide speaks. If someone beats a system while acting like they were told to by God, someone who is good at lightly cutting themselves will get blood on their arms and shoulders. If someone is on their knees howling down the street, or an old man dressed in linen comes out in the middle of the day with a lamp and a laurel branch and cries out that one of the gods is mad, everyone gathers around them to listen and declares that he is speaking from God. Look, Socrates is talking to you from his jail, which he made more honorable and free of shame than any Senate house. He is asking you, what is this madness of yours? What is it about you that makes you act this way with gods and people, that makes you say bad things about virtue and offend holiness? If you can, praise good guys. If you can't, just walk by them quietly. If you really enjoy being rude and insulting, then get into fights with each other. By ranting against heaven, you don't do anything holy, I say. You just waste your time. Once upon a time, Aesop and Socrates, you talked badly about someone in a joke. All of the comic writers have made me a mark ever since for their clever wit. They hits that were directed at my virtue have made it shine even brighter, because it is good for virtue to be seen by many people and be open to temptation. Nor do those who have attacked it to test its strength better understand how great it is than anyone else. People who strike flint are the only ones who really know how hard it is. I'm open to all attacks, like a lonely rock in a weak sea that the waves keep hitting from all sides but can't move or wear away. No matter how many years they keep running against it, bound upon me, rush upon me, I will beat you by bearing your start. When something hits something solid and unconquerable, it only hurts itself by being violent. So, find something soft and bendy to poke holes in with your dots. But do you have time to look into other people's bad acts and judge them? Do you have time to ask how this teacher has such a big house or that person is so good at dinner? Do you look at other people's pimples when you have a lot of your own right now? In this case, it's like someone who was eaten by the mains would be rude about the scars and warts on the bodies of the hottest guys. Talk about Plato as if he had been looking for money. Talk to Aristotle about having gotten it. Democritus was blamed for ignoring it. Alcibiades had already spent it. Cassiopeia and Alcibiades, in my own teeth, you who enjoy yourself to the fullest whenever you get the chance, copying our flaws. Why don't you look around at the problems that are tearing you apart all around you? Some are coming at you from the outside, and some are burning inside you. No matter how little you know about your own place, people haven't reached a point where you can wag your tongues around to make your superiors laugh. It's like many men who sit in the circus or the theater without realizing that their home is already in grief. You don't understand this, and your successes don't match your state. As I look ahead from a high place, I can see what rains are either coming your way and will wash away everything you own soon, or they are right behind you and about to hit you in a flood. There is probably a storm going on right now that you aren't even aware of. It's spinning around and making your minds think about the same things over and over again, sometimes lifting them up and then crashing them down.